Just when you thought it was safe to take down your jack-o'-lantern, the spooky season returns. But not just any spookum, a genre-defining one. Because two horror fans, and the occasional special guest, refuse to let evil die tonight. Welcome to the Apocalypse Video Halloween Retrospective. I am your slightly less creepy narrator, David Snyder. It's time, kiddies. Ditch those silver shamrock masks and grab an all-white William Shatner classic. It's Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers.
Ten years ago, on the night of October 31st, a small Midwestern town fell victim to an escaped killer. Under the cover of darkness, he carried out the most horrifying mass murder on record. 16 people in cold blood. Ever since that night, no one has forgotten his name. And Halloween has never been the same. Michael Myers has come home. He has returned for one more night of unholy terror.
Michael!
Somebody help me!
He's here to kill that little girl and anybody who gets in his way.
Oh, God!
Who's gonna be next?
Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers.
Maybe nobody knows how to stop him.
Hello, and welcome back to the magnificent return of Michael Myers! It's Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers on the Apocalypse Video Halloween Retrospective. Sorry, it's really tough on my throat to do that voice. I'm your host, Dave. I'm joined again by fellow horror fan and man that will not die, Nicholas Immortan Hoof.
I'm back.
Now, as we said before, you had seen the first three Halloween movies. And after that, it's completely, you have no idea what you're in store for. You have never seen Halloween 4. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So now that you've seen Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers, I'm kind of curious, just to get a pulse, like, are you excited for what is, you know, do you want to see more of the series, or after part four, are you kind of like, eh?
I'm probably closer to the inside, but I mean, I'm not like repulsed by it, you know, this kind of movie is very, just like, okay, you know, like, it's fun, it's a good time. That's the thing, is if they're all like this, then, you know, it's probably closer in line to maybe, like, we talked about Final Destination, so just a fun time. You know, if as long as the kills stay creative and you know, there's not, the characters aren't terrible, then, you know, I think we might be in for some treats.
We'll see. I'm curious. You said that as long as the kills are creative. So would you say the kills in this movie are fairly good?
They're fine. They're they're okay. There's not like, I think that this movie, for me, this movie, what it has going for it is, I think I was on board for the suspense that it was building. Like I think that even the story, even though the story I think is kind of, I don't know if hokey's the right word, but...
Threadbare?
Yeah, that's a better way of putting it, yeah. even though that stuff is a little weaker, I was on board with the story, basically, you know, I was moving with it.
This is kind of like Halloween 4 is kind of like the epitome of a popcorn movie. You know, turn off your brain. It's not that complicated. It doesn't ask that much of you. I think all that I feel like anyone would really demand of this movie is like, you know, much in the same vein as Friday the 13th. It's like, just, you know, all they need is the killer running around, killing some people, like you said, in creative ways. Hopefully it's shot well, and hopefully the characters aren't too annoying, and it'll get, at the very least, like a pass, you know? So I feel like, at the very least, Halloween 4 gets a pass. And I think, as far as I know, like, as far as the general consensus for Halloween 4, it meets all of that criteria, and it's generally well-liked.
I think if you are a fan of these, of a franchise, so if you're a fan of Halloween, then you would definitely at least like this movie.
I mean, yeah, I don't think it's quite the same level as like Halloween 2, which itself is just more of the first one. But I think the thing that something like Halloween 2 has over Halloween 4, even though it's essentially the same movie, you know, obviously it's shot by a different person, it's directed by a different person, I think this kind of feels like, and I don't mean this to be like a major diss or anything. There's no real malice behind this, although it's probably going to sound like it. But Halloween 4 kind of feels like the Walmart version of Halloween. Does that make sense? Like, it's the great value version. Like, the cinematography is good. And I think at times you and I were like, I really like how everything looks blue.
Yeah, well, that was something that I noticed, that it seemed like they were going pretty aggressive on the any like night or moonlight shot. Blue. They had this cool blue light going on, and it's very spooky.
It's spooky, but it's like, it's not the same level of suspense, I feel, or like I feel filmmaking prowess as 1 or 2, for that matter. It's, I don't know. What do you think?
I agree with that for sure. Well, for sure, 1, because 1 is
definitely 1. Yeah,
I think
1 is untouchable.
Well, 1 is top tier, I think, in terms of, you know, it's kind of the best a slasher can be. You know, there's a couple other movies that come to mind of that kind of caliber. But if you're talking about like the fourth entry of a horror franchise, you know, I think that this, a little behind 2 because I think 2, the advantage to 2 is that it's all pretty much taking place in this creepy hospital, right? So it's got a little bit more memorable, things going on, especially the setting. I think the setting is, even though it's kind of weird, it's still cool.
It's surreal.
Yeah. Whereas this one, 4, I think that threadbare plot that you had mentioned is definitely hinders it from memorability factor. But at the same time, I think when you're watching it, there's a couple things that stand out in the story that like remember how you and I were kind of cracking up, or when they're like just bullying the crap out of this little girl. Like, it's like
Jamie's uncle's the boogeyman.
Yeah.
Like, I forget what they said. There's some line where it's like, why didn't your mom make you a costume? How could she? Her mom's dead. It's like, whoa.
Hey, Jamie, where's your costume? Where's your mask? Or are you wearing it?
I don't need to wear a stupid costume.
That's because every day is Halloween at Jamie's house. Right, Jamie? Because your uncle's the boogeyman.
Boogeyman, boogeyman. Jamie's uncle's a boogeyman.
How come your mommy didn't make you a costume, Jamie?
How could she? Her mommy's dead. Jamie's mommy's a mommy.
Stop it, okay? Stop it!
Jamie's an orphan.
These are like eight or nine-year-olds, too.
Yeah, it's vicious. And she's... Yeah, so I think like that stuff is going to... I'm always going to remember that, even though if we think like the kid aspect is goofy, like just the cruelty towards this kid is like pretty... I don't know. I felt bad for her. And then there's the drama when she's running away. I think they're like playing like some really sad song or something like that, and she's just like in tears. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's brutal.
Yeah, it is one interesting point this movie has that the first two don't, because like in Halloween 2, Laurie doesn't find out. In fact, actually, come to think of it, Laurie Strode, Jamie Lee Curtis, never finds out in the first two movies that Michael Myers is her brother. She's just like, Michael Myers is out to get me. That's all she knows. Because it's not like there's a scene in Halloween 2 after Loomis finds out that their brother's sister, that he tells her, you're his sister, that's why he's out to kill you. It's like, that never happens.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a unique thing that Halloween 4 has, is that she knows that she is related to Michael Myers. Everyone else also knows that she's related to Michael Myers. So it kind of, I like that it puts her, the girl, the little girl Jamie, into like this outsider position.
Yeah, you know, to kind of add on to that, the world that Halloween 4 has built specifically is kind of interesting, because I don't think this was, I don't know what the thing is, but you notice this is like, remember the time where the gang of punks, they show up in the Michael Myers outfits and they're like tricking the, I don't know, the cops or the posse or whatever. And it's just like, it's really weird that this town would be selling the costume of like
the mask of notorious murderer Michael Myers from a decade ago.
Yeah.
To briefly get into the plot of this movie, it is super simple. It's 10 years after the events of Halloween, and Michael's back. He's escaped. Turns out he didn't die. Him and Loomis did not die in that fury explosion in the hospital. They lived. Dr. Loomis has like a tiny little scar on his cheek, and like his hand is messed up a little bit, but that's it.
Michael walks with a cane at first.
Well, at first, he does not. Nobody told Donald Pleasance like how you need to walk with a cane. He just oftentimes he just sort of like fiddles it in front of him. He doesn't even like put it on the ground and use it as a cane. He's just kind of fiddling it like. But basically, the plot is Myers finds out that he's got a niece and he's gonna go kill her, and that's the movie. It's super super simple, and of course, at this point, post Halloween 2, Donald Pleasance's performance as Loomis is like veered off into evil is everywhere. He cannot be stopped, Sheriff. You know, he plays it. Yes, he plays it to 100. So much so where they have to. They have like another character come in. I forget his name, but he's like this preacher guy. It's the same guy who played Jimmy Cut Corn and I Don't Care, you know, the singing guy on the train in Pee-wee's Big Adventure. He plays this crazy preacher, and like even this guy, this crazy guy, like spots it on Loomis. He's like, "Oh, you're a pilgrim, ain't you? You're crazy like me." You know? It's just like, I love that they fully embrace that Loomis is insane, and even his colleagues are like, "Dude, you need to stop. I've had to listen to your shit for a decade." I love the way the guy says it. Decade, you know.
Yeah, it's like
he's so through with Lewis's shit.
I can see this is useless.
Do you know what today is? Do you know the date? Every day I look at myself in the mirror, and every day I remember. Look at me, Hoffman. Take a good look. I don't want anyone to have to live through that night again.
I've said this before. I think you're the one who needs mental help.
It's very, like, this is the most obvious movie where people, like, don't like Loomis. It's very clear that he's just, I don't know. And it's funny because I think we talked about this in the first one, but it's like, maybe Loomis was a bad
psychiatrist.
And maybe all these other people also know that. But this is like, now we're actually seeing them interact, and it's like, oh yeah, he's not just like the quote unquote victim who is the doctor with the most evil patient. Like, maybe he's just a bit, maybe he contributes to Michael Myers. Who knows?
No.
He's so, well, because he's like, we're talking about evil on two legs.
Okay, he
speaks like exclusively in like, you know, what's the term, like prophecy of doom.
Yeah,
like that's all he speaks in.
Yeah, so you know, that bit does make me wonder, fan theory, you know, if we believe that Loomis was inclined to those kind of thoughts before Michael Myers got to him, maybe he created Michael Myers in a sense.
Maybe.
Because
well,
if you live this world that you think, you know, there's evil in this world and that evil can be incarnate, and this kid, you know, who lands in front of you and he murdered somebody, you know, maybe you're predisposed to treat him. I don't know. I'm just saying.
We do. We never see Loomis treat Michael. We never see him pre Michael. So it's like we never get a sense. We only ever see Loomis like the first time we see Loomis, he's just like resigned. He like that's the only difference between one and two. Like he's just resigned to it. And then in the second one, I guess he just feels like it's his responsibility to keep evil at bay and he must stop Michael. And yeah.
It is very different because I mean, in terms of the way Loomis, I don't know, is acting and treating Michael. And I mean, there's still that sentiment that this is like a force for sure. But
yeah,
in the first one, Loomis is very, I don't know, I guess to be fair, at that time, Michael hadn't massacred people aside from his initial crime. Right. So,
he killed one person.
Yeah. So, I mean, and then that, after the first one, he had gone on a full on rampage. So it's a little different, but yeah, it's just funny to think about. I mean, the way we see, Loomis, I mean, I could see, an alternate universe where Loomis actually like contributed to Michael being evil because of, he was like, maybe he talked to Michael in the therapy session. It's like, do you believe in evil? And this little 8-year-old kid or whatever is like, I think so.
That's right, Michael. Pick up the knife.
Exactly. He probably like did this test where he put it like a knife, a rubber ducky, a donut in front of him. He's like, pick up your favorite. And then he's like, and then he's like, ooh, is the knife your favorite? And I don't know, it seems not impossible. So just saying.
Yeah, we never even see him treat any other patients. Like, presumably, Michael Myers is his only patient. It's funny. But, like, yeah, this movie, Halloween 4, like, it's interesting. This movie, I mentioned threadbare plot. This movie was written very quickly and submitted hours before a writer's strike occurred. Oh, wow. Where they would not be able to revise the script. And I gotta say, for being written so quickly, I think it was literally written in like 2 weeks, the entire script. Like, it's fine, you know. like I don't expect much from movies like this. Like I said, it's like when for slasher movies like this, or just slasher movies in general, it's like you gotta have a memorable villain, you gotta have ideally a memorable protagonist. In this case, I think Loomis definitely fits that bill. He's crazy. And I think we get a bonus too. I think like the hero of this movie, Jamie, I think she's great. Daniel Harris, like I she gets a lot of accolades for this movie, and I think it's well deserved. Like she, like there's, like you mentioned before, that scene when the kids are like bullying her, like there's just the moment she has where she's like, you're okay, you're gonna be okay, you know what I mean? Like I feel like she kind of exudes, like she seems a little older than she is. Like she feel, it comes off that she has more life experience than you think she would at that age. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do agree with you. But part of me wonders, like, I don't know. I think I'm a little mixed. I kind of like
didn't
it.
Think
but
she
I
was that great?
Well, no, not that her performance, but in terms of making the child act like a child, as opposed to, because I think you're right, where she is acting like older than her age. But I don't know if that's, I think it's walking the line between like believability and like, that's a way a character would have act or something like that. Because I do like that scene actually where she does like talk to herself. Like that seems like a very like adult coping mechanism.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
And she's using it. And I think so. But a part of me is like, is this kid too smart? Like, is this kid, you know, too not powerful, but like, is it, you know, is this writing too convenient? I don't know. So it's, but it seems, but I do like that moment that you talked about. And then,
you know,
she's
seen, I would have, oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, like, she is actually one thing that is, like I said about, like her teasing and stuff like that. Actually, like the way Michael chases her down in several scenes, gets pretty, it's not graphic, but it's, vivid. Like when she's he grabs her feet from like under the bed.
Well, that's, yeah, I mean, to be fair, that's a dream sequence in the beginning.
Oh, that's true, but we still see like that against her. So I feel, yeah, like, you know, just seeing, I don't know, it's, kid violence is just kind of brutal to me. So like, even if it's like in their head, it's like, it does stand out to me.
And you know, speaking of which, like, I would have loved to have seen a scene where she's talking to a psychiatrist, not necessarily Loomis, but like, you know, where she's talking about the fact that she knows her uncle is quote unquote the boogeyman, Michael Myers. So the reason she's having these dreams is because she freaking knows. And apparently every Halloween, every store in Haddonfield sells the damn Michael Myers mask. So it's just like, she has to live with this. Like that would have been an interesting scene to, you mentioned before, like, okay, Michael, I'm going to put a knife on the thing, a rubber ducky, like pick your favorite. Like it would have been fun. Like if they had a scene similar to that, but with Jamie, I feel like if maybe they're, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I would have loved to have seen a scene when she's talking to like a psychiatrist. That would have been cool and interesting.
I agree with you. I think that would have been cool. One thing that this movie seems to not have is very much forethought. So like, I think like those therapy scenes that you had mentioned or the end reveal, I think these are both kind of, they kind of come out of nowhere, and so it's like the movie doesn't seem really concerned with building on itself.
Like that was like the, so spoiler, at the end of this movie, like they run Michael Myers off the road, they hit him with the car, she kind of goes down and like touches his hand, and they end up shooting him more, and the suggestion is that his evil like transfers to her, and she ends up killing her foster mom in a really awesome ending. I love this ending. I think it's really well done. The problem is, what would have made it even better is if it was set up, like you mentioned. Like, I think this would have been, like, I imagine the psychiatry scene that could have been with her, like, maybe they could have hinted at that. Maybe the psychiatrist could have been like, are you having, like, bad thoughts or, you know, that kind of thing. They could have built up to it a little bit. Because like you said, it comes out of nowhere. There's no suggestion that the evil will transfer to her throughout the movie. You know what I mean? She's just having bad dreams about her scary uncle. Like, there's no inclination that she's going to turn evil.
When it was over, didn't I turn to you and say, is she evil now or something? Like, I needed
when, to... Well, when she touched his hand.
Yeah, it was like oh, she got evil?
She got evil?
Just like, yeah, there's no, it does, I mean, I guess you could argue that because she was having these visions and stuff like that, that there was a pre-existing connection, but it really is, it just feels so out of the blue that she turns into a murderer. Like, it's, I think you're onto something about having some kind of like a cool establishing character building, like with through a therapy session or something like that, or some even like, you know, one of the your favorite things, foreshadowing. It didn't seem like it really had any of that. So,
no, not at all. Like if they could have, and granted, like I said, the script was written very quickly because a writer's strike was on the horizon. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, given that they went with the ending they did, had they had time to maybe do a few more drafts, that maybe I would hope that maybe they would have built this up a bit more, foreshadowed it a little bit. Maybe even like Loomis is a little uneasy around her. You know what I mean? Like, is she evil too? You know?
Yeah. So I agree with you. I think, like I said, I think this movie doesn't do a lot to build on itself, which in some ways, you know, maybe to its credit in terms of if you're thinking about, I don't know, making a movie that doesn't fail, you know,
this whole movie could be described as playing it safe.
Yeah, it's very vanilla in a way.
Yeah.
But you know what I was thinking? I was thinking that, you know, if the movie were to do something like a psychiatry session or doing some kind of foreshadowing or building, I think that's when movies do run into the very real opportunity of becoming stupid. Like, I don't think this movie is like stupid or anything like that. And so it doesn't really make any wrong turns because it doesn't really make any turns except at the very end. But aside from that, it kind of just goes, you know, walks a straight path. And I think that if maybe they were just playing it safe by not really doing anything like that, because it doesn't really fumble anything. But again, it doesn't take any chances. It also doesn't really have any like really crappy stuff.
I mean, it does go big at the end.
That's true, yeah.
You know, it would have been nice. And I'm sure they were just like, this is going to just freak. Like, people are going to be like, what? And I'm sure they did. Like, you were, like, when it happened, you were like, you were a little, I could tell you were surprised.
I was surprised.
Especially at the brutality of it. Like, you just see her covered in blood and just holding the knife.
Yeah. Well, I had a little help watching this, but But yeah, I like I said, I was on board with this movie. I was totally like, this is a fun movie. And I mean, it's, you know, it's a good, exactly what you said. Like it kind of, what's that phrase? It is what it said on the can or something like that. Or, but there's a phrase.
It is what it said on the can.
God dang it. It's what it does what it says on the tin. Have you ever heard that?
No.
Oh, it's a phrase. It's an expression. It says it does what it says on the tin.
I was going to compare this movie to A Quarter Pounder with Cheese. You know exactly what you're getting. It's good, but it's not the best burger you've ever had. You know what I mean? It's the exact same thing you always get when you get A Quarter Pounder with Cheese, and that's fine. It's totally serviceable and pretty good.
I think I would rather have A Quarter Pounder with Cheese than this.
You wouldn't compare. Oh, this doesn't reach the heights of A Quarter Pounder with Cheese.
I think Quarter Pounder with Cheese is a little better than a Halloween.
this comes close to a McDouble, but that's about as close.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think this is more in line with a McDouble than a Quarter Pounder with Cheese. You know? Quarter Pounder with Cheese has the sesame seed bun, right? Yeah. This movie is not sesame seed bun.
If they had laid those sesame seeds throughout the movie to foreshadow her turn at the end, maybe it would have earned those sesame seeds.
I agree with you. Yeah. So, but this is definitely like on the budget menu of McDonald's.
It's a value meal.
Yeah, because I mean, Quarter Pounder with Cheese, I think that's still like a little pricier. So
it's like, yeah, it's like $3-4.
Yeah,
it's a little you know, expensive. I would say another thing this movie has to its credit, it's I feel like it has kind of a sense of fun to it. Like it knows that this is, you know, this is 1988. This is years into the slasher boom. In fact, you could argue that the slasher boom had passed. Not to say that they weren't still cranking out horror movies all the time, but you know, they weren't quite as popular. You know what I mean? Like the heyday of the slasher was probably 81, 82.
The bubble
was like
had
a new
burst.
Slasher. Say again?
The bubble had burst.
Yeah, the bubble had burst. So now, like, you know, and it's kind of funny. Like I was looking in the trivia. 1988 was the first year in the decade where all the major franchises had a movie out the same year. Friday the 13th, Halloween, Nightmare on Elm Street, Hellraiser, even Child's Play came out this year. They were all in the same year. But
this
year is
a slasher.
Yeah, this is yeah, but this but it, but even still, like you know, like it was diminishing returns at this point. Friday the 13th, Part 7 had come out. It grossed, I think, it might have grossed even less than the previous one. So it was on the decline. But even that said, like I feel like this movie has like it's fun. I mean, come on. There's a scene in the beginning when he sticks his thumb through a guy's forehead.
Oh yeah.
there's a sense of fun. They're kind of playing loose. And like, I think one of the things that I love most about this movie is, and the, where I think it's really fun is the whole idea of this, roaming group of, hillbillies that kind of just drive these drunk guys that kind of just drive around and form a posse when all the cops are killed.
Yeah. Remember we were saying like, oh, we need a posse. They just instantly form.
And it immediately like it like spontaneously forms. Like people just come out of nowhere like,
Yeah, so actually this movie had another opportunity with that kind of mob mentality because but it doesn't really do any. In fact, it almost treats it like inconsequential because
they murder an innocent man.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like the movie doesn't really talk of, I mean, it just mentions it and then it just kind of moves on. It's just like, oh, we just had, you know, a group of four
drunken idiots.
Yeah, just like, you know, drunken idiots, and they killed a man.
Shit, Earl. It's Ted Hollister.
You dumb son of a bitch. You said you saw Myers.
Well, and they also destroyed the gazebo downtown.
Yeah.
They could have pushed it further. And again, I wonder if this, you know, like we said, you know, they were trying to crank the script out quick. And also, you got to imagine that this is a Halloween movie. It's a low budget. Well, so I'm sure that, like, in fact, reading in the trivia, the original way they wanted to open this movie they wanted to tie it in more with Halloween 2. They want the original way this movie was supposed to open was you see it opens on a hospital hallway. There's no sound, and then boom, an explosion. And Loomis is kind of carried out, and you see Michael burning, and the fire department is like throwing water on him, and he's just like, no, let him burn, and they douse Michael, so that's how he's supposed to live. They basically pull him out of the fire, but it was deemed too expensive, wasn't in the movie. And I gotta wonder if it's a similar thing here, because I feel like again this movie could have went from a McDouble to a quarter pounder with cheese if they had one, had this whole psychiatry bit and foreshadowing of Jamie, and two, if they really amped up this whole idea of this crazy mob running around town just shooting people. We've already established that there are like kids running around with the Michael Myers mask, so it's presumable, you know, presumably they could have shot a couple kids, you know what yeah. I mean? they could have amped this up in so many ways with this mob.
Well, two things. One, let's keep the Halloween, let's keep ranking Halloween movies based on like the McDonald's menu. I think that's really funny. and very descriptive.
Would Halloween 1 be a quarter pounder with cheese?
Oh, dude, Halloween 1 deluxe? Is double quarter pounder with cheese. Like, that is, that's the peak, right? There's nothing better.
I don't know. I like a double quarter pounder with cheese. How did this turn into a McDonald's podcast? But I like a double quarter pounder with cheese, but sometimes it's like it's too much meat. Like, I feel like the quarter pounder is just the right ratio.
Wrong.
I know you're a meats guy. You work out. You like the protein, but it's like for me, like I think like the best balance is just the regular quarter pounder.
No, so Halloween 1, a double quarter pounder cheese, and then Halloween 3 is a Big Mac.
I'm surprised you're not comparing Halloween 1 to a McRib, your favorite thing.
Ooh. No, because, no, McRib is a very unique, special thing. Like, Halloween 3 is actually closer to a McRib. Because
really?
It is it's so different and unique, right? Because it's
and
not
it only
the
comes around once in a franchise.
Exactly. I mean, there's no correct. Well, you've seen them all, so you can answer, but is there anything else like Halloween 3?
Some people 3? Hate it, other yeah. people love it.
Oh my God, we're on to something. This is. We are. There's never been a better descriptor for Halloween 3 than the McRib of Halloween's.
Oh my God. All right. Well, then Halloween 4 is a McDouble. Halloween 3 is a McRib. Halloween 2 is a quarter pounder. And Halloween 1 is a double quarter pounder. Does that sound about right?
Yeah. I guess a quarter. Yeah. I would agree with that actually, because if you gave me a quarter pounder with cheese, I would actually be disappointed because I want the double quarter pounder cheese. So it's
one step below. So it's perfect.
So we're in agreement here on the McDonald's scale. So
we kind of talked about what we liked. Was there anything in this movie that you really did not like, or anything that's like, yeah, that could have been better?
Well, there was one thing. There was one thing about the posse. I wanted to ask you, because like I said, I haven't even seen the new ones, right? The new trilogy.
Any of them?
No, neither. None of them. No.
Wow.
So isn't that something that happens in like the second one of the new trilogy, where there's like a mob mentality thing?
It's pretty hard to escape Evil Dies Tonight. That was like, that movie was very divisive, Halloween Kills, but there's one thing that everyone agreed on is the meme ability of Evil Dies Tonight.
Evil Dies Tonight!
But didn't they do like a mob thing in that movie?
That was like the whole movie.
Oh, okay. So there's a movie exploring that, which is, you know, I think, In 1,000 years, when an alien is examining the relic of Halloween, then they will say, oh, you know, Halloween 4 laid the groundwork for the whatever Halloween did.
Halloween Kills could fly.
That's right. So I guess we'll get there. But I just wanted to ask because I was curious. I think I heard that there was a movie that did the mob stuff. And so, but yeah, there was that. I think that was a big missed opportunity. Not that I think that if they had actually gone through with that commentary, it would have ended up well. But nonetheless, it was an opportunity they didn't really explore. And that's kind of my biggest complaint about Halloween 4 is that I don't think it does anything terribly wrong or anything that I really hated, but it doesn't really do anything a whole lot interesting several opportunities.
Yeah, and to be fair, this whole idea of like the protagonist potentially going bad was kind of explored already a few years earlier in Friday the 13th. That's kind of the whole bit around Friday the 13th, 5, A New Beginning. Like, is the protagonist of the previous movie, has he gone crazy? Is he the one killing people? Spoiler, it turns out he wasn't. They chicken out and they don't do it, you know, make the good guy from one movie the killer in the next. But this was kind of explored earlier. And this, like I said, like this one, yeah, I think you're right. Like, there's nothing egregiously bad about this movie. It's just sort of, you know, kind of generic slasher that happens to feature one of the most, you know, one of the most popular slashers ever, Michael Myers. It's just, and like, honestly, even the mask in this movie, it's a different mask. And it just sort of, it's not bad, but it's just sort of like, you know what I mean? Like, what am I? I kind of lost the thread there. Sorry. Oh,
that's okay. I wanted to say that I think, you know, you had mentioned the original opening that they wanted and that they scrapped it because it was too expensive. And I think there are a couple times in this movie, especially in the beginning, that it's not that we see a lack of budget, but they choose to not show us certain scenes. And I would imagine
certain deaths.
Yeah. Like, remember when Michael Myers attacked the police station, right? And they don't even show any of that, which is kind of surprising. I mean, you would think that, that's a very rife scene. Like, I mean, we saw that in Maniac Cop, an attack on a police station. We've seen that in several movies. And so it seems like it seems surprising to me that they wouldn't include that at all.
You know what it is? They probably don't show it because Michael Myers is so slow and stiff in this movie that if we saw that scene, we would probably be asking ourselves, why don't the cops just like kind of, you know, walk around him? He's very, very slow. Like I mentioned in Halloween 2 that he seemed very, very stiff. There's that scene in Halloween 2 where he's walking down the stairs, but his head is looking forward, like not looking down where he's stepping. You know what I mean? And he's even more stiff in this one. Like there is an unintentional bit of comedy in this movie when he is, and it's ironic because it's inside one of the more suspenseful scenes in the movie when Michael is chasing Jamie and I forget her name, her stepsister on the roof of this house, of the sheriff's house. You know, it's a suspenseful scene. It's really well done. And it's also a really cool setting in the movie. Like getting, we gotta, you know, escape to, you know, they get chased up to the attic and then they have to crawl out. It's very well done. It's suspenseful, but you cut to a shot of Michael Myers struggling to get over like the top of the roof. He's like, you know, because he's so stiff. He looks like a turtle that's been pushed over and is like on his back. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's so stiff. It's like he has no joints. Like his arms, he's like an action figure with no points of articulation.
That's funny.
And it's just unintentionally funny. Like every time we see Michael in the movie, he is gripping his knife, like, you know, in a death grip. He will not let it go. Even so much, like when he gets flung from the car later in the movie and he's rolling on the you know, on the road, he doesn't drop his knife. He's still holding on to his knife even as he's rolling on the ground. It's just kind of unintentionally funny to me.
Yeah, that is funny. It's almost, I do actually like that he doesn't ever let go of his knife because it's almost like the knife is an extension of himself.
Unless he's using the shotgun as an extension of himself.
Oh, yeah. We didn't even talk about the shotgun death.
Oh, my God. The shotgun death. Like, did you see that coming at all?
No, I did not.
Because Michael Myers traditionally does not use guns, even typically in a stabbing gesture. But in this movie, he takes a shotgun and impales a girl through this door. And it's so ridiculous. Like, this is what I was getting at. Like, this is like the Halloween filmmakers saying, like, okay, it's 1988. There's been 7 Friday the 13th movies. There's been, you know, 4 Nightmare on Elm Streets. Like, we got to up the ante here. We just can't have him stab people. Like, that's boring. We got to be creative with this stuff. And that's when we get the shotgun impalement. We get the thumb through the forehead. And I feel like there's one more kill in this movie that's kind of fun that I'm blanking on.
He's got, like, when he puts the thumb through the forehead, it's pretty cool. It's like he's like holding the head like a bowling ball or something like that.
Yes. What if he stuck all three of his like three fingers through the guy's head like an actual bowling ball?
Oh, man.
And then ripped the head off.
Then it would have been I don't know, that seems like something they would do in the eighth entry.
That would have taken this movie off the value menu with odds.
that would have been like hitting a double quarter pounder with cheese or with fries.
And deliciously juicy quarter pounder. Or you could just eat them. The hottest, juiciest quarter pounder yet. It's perfect. Made perfecter. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Oh, God. But I think the movie, the kills in it are creative enough to where it keeps my interest and to satisfy, you know, slasher gore hounds.
Yeah, I think that this is, it's satisfactory. Like, I think, you know, it doesn't really commit any sins. It doesn't do a whole lot wrong, but because it doesn't really do a whole lot. But I was, you know, entertained.
You know, I think you nailed why I lost the thread earlier. I don't really have a ton of bad things to say about this movie. Like, honestly, I didn't really have any notes to this movie because it is really just Halloween again. You know what I mean? Like, there's a couple of little twinkles of originality here, but not much. Again, nothing that's really explored deeply or, you know, whatever. Really, all you could ask of a movie like Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers, what they set out to do was, okay, we know everyone was pissed off at the third movie that didn't have Michael. We'll bring him back. We'll literally say, listen, it's called The Return of Michael Myers. He's back. We promise you. That's all this movie had to do, and it would have been a hit.
Yeah.
And I think it does that. And it's fun. It's totally, like you said, satisfactory, and there's nothing super bad about it. But on the same token, like, it doesn't, I don't have that much to say about it as a result.
Sure. I think it's, there's not a whole lot of,
there's not a lot of meat here.
Yeah. There's really not. It's pretty, you know, skin and bones. I think that, like, Halloween 4 is, I don't know, kind of like, I think you said it earlier, the Walmart version of Halloween. I think that's pretty apt because it's like, it's almost like it's a sizzle reel of what the really good movie is. Because I
like,
think
I could say like Friday, like when we talked about Friday 13th 7, like we didn't think it was a great movie, but at the very least that movie's doing something. It's like, what if Jason fought Carrie? You know what I mean? It's like, it's not great, but it's at least they're doing something, you know?
Yeah. But I think that this movie really, succeeded in a sense because, well, actually tell me what ended up happening, but it seems like this would actually regain the trust, or so to speak, of people who were clamoring for Michael to return.
And I think that, and again, that's why they had to play it safe. It's like, we need to make just another Halloween movie, bring people back in. And this movie was a success. They ended up making the next movie, Halloween 5, less than a year later. Halloween 5 came out 1 year after this movie.
Oh, wow.
So they had a quick turnaround. This movie had a quick turnaround, obviously. And then the movie to follow, Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers, came out like right after. So that's what the title says. We'll have to watch the movie to find out. But the tagline for Halloween 5 is, Michael lives. And this time, they're ready.
Who's ready?
Which is such a lame title, I'm sorry.
But yeah, that's not so good.
Like, the tagline for this one, 10 years ago, he changed the face of Halloween. Tonight, he's back.
I don't know if these taglines are hooking me.
Not really, no. But, yeah, Halloween 4, like we said, not much else to say. Decent movie. Check it out. I wouldn't suggest, if you've never seen any of the Halloweens, I wouldn't start with this one, obviously. In fact, I would say if you've never seen any of the Halloweens, watch the first one and then get the hell... Oh, watch the first one and then watch the third one and then get the hell out of there. Like, you know, I don't think you need to see any of the Halloweens except one and to a lesser extent three, because three is so bonkers.
Oh, okay. Hold on. We got some time for this. If you think that, like, why do you love Halloween so much?
What, the first one?
No, because you love the franchise, right? You're like,
oh,
like
no, a... well, I'm saying this from the point of, I'm putting this out there for someone who's not maybe not a horror fan, you know what I mean, who's not a diehard horror fan. Like I would say that as far as essentials go, and if you've never seen Halloween, you really only need to see the first one, because all, with the exception of Halloween 3, all the other ones are pretty derivative of the first one. They don't do really anything spectacular. I mean, granted, how the end of this movie has that great ending where she kills her mother-in-law, but that's about it. Like, you know, the movies don't really, and I guess I'm kind of like revealing my hand a little bit for the next handful of movies, I suppose, that you haven't seen. But I would say for someone, if you've never seen a Halloween movie and you're not really a big horror fan, I would only recommend the first one.
Yeah. I would definitely agree. First one is kind of, unless you hate horror, you should. It's one of those mandatory movies, I think I would say. And then,
well, it's just such a cultural touchstone.
Yeah, and it's also legitimately really good.
Still to this day. I mean, granted, some of the 70s stuff doesn't age well, but the movie itself and the suspense absolutely does.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to mention. If you were like comparing or contrasting one and four, one being the best, there is the reason one is so great is the suspense is just constant, and and then I think that, you know, four is the suspense, I think, is sort of constant, but it's way less intense. It's more, you know, if you're like, if you get in line with the movie, you know, you're kind of you're into it and you're interested, but it's not like, you know, it's definitely not scary, and it's not really. You're not, I wasn't really worried about characters and stuff like that. So, just the intensity is way different. But other than that, I think like, if you actually like horror or whatever, I think this is pretty good, especially if you're horror, if you like Halloween and Michael Myers, and I think this is good for you.
Oh, you know, something just occurred to me. One thing we forgot to mention, we were mentioning like cool kills. We forgot to mention one crazy thing that Michael does in this movie. I think it's crazy. So, there's a scene when the posse, you know, they hear the alarms at the school. Like Jamie and Loomis have lured Michael to the school. They break in, which triggers the alarm. They want people to come. The posse comes. They get Jamie, and they drive off. And then we find out later that Michael Myers has pulled a Cape Fear and apparently has been hiding underneath the truck while it's in motion as the posse drives away. And this is like, this is one of the more crazier things in the movie, because evidently he holds on to the bottom carriage of this truck for a while. You know what I mean? It's a while before you see his hands come up over the back ramp of the truck, and he just somehow he crawls from the bottom of the car or the truck while it's in motion on a highway and just crawl. It's honestly the most unbelievable thing that Michael does, perhaps in the series.
That's aside why from he struggled living. On the roof later, because he was so exhausted from the truck.
But was I the, like, what was your reaction when you, because like, did you expect Michael to come out from the bottom of the truck while it was in motion?
No, I don't think it really registered to me that like he,
that that's what happened.
Yeah. I think I kind of, I remember him coming up. I don't know if I realized that the truck was in motion and that there was an implication that he fought. Cause there's no scene of him actually underneath the truck, right?
No,
it's just implied.
No.
Okay. So yeah. So I don't think I had realize that that's what the movie was kind of saying.
And I really doubt that he would have just been dragging, you know, on the back, like holding onto the back ramp and dragging the whole way. I feel like somebody, like one of the like 10 cops that passed him on the highway would have noticed, hey, there's a guy hanging off the back of the truck. You know what I mean? I think it makes more sense that, I mean, I hate to say it makes sense, but, you know, like, I think it makes, he was hanging onto the bottom and that's why nobody saw him.
Yeah, I mean, I believe in, like, it does fall in line with the capabilities I think we have, or we believe Michael has. So.
But then it gets even more absurd, because, like, somehow he's able to crawl up. He, like, so as the scene is positioned, I think you have maybe, what, two or three guys in the back of that truck. They're like,
oh, yeah.
They're like, and so he's able to, like, grab one guy, throw him off, while the other guy sitting in the truck is oblivious somehow. It just doesn't make any... It's just so bizarrely choreographed, this moment.
Yeah.
And also the people inside the cab of the truck have no idea what's going on right behind them. it's so insane.
Well, what are you going to do?
But here's the thing, though. Like, I mentioned earlier, like, the movie has kind of a sense of, like, playfulness. And I feel like that's kind of the vibe that this scene has. It's utter ridiculousness. I think the movie kind of knows it. And it kind of leans into that. And it's one of the reasons why I enjoy this. Like, out of all the sequels, it's one of the more enjoyable ones, I feel. Because it kind of has a sense of playfulness a little bit. It kind of knows that it's schlock, you know. And I like that it kind of leans into that at times. Like, let's just be real. Like, sticking a thumb through a guy's forehead to kill him is preposterous, but fun.
That's how I kill people.
Yeah, but you stick like your thumb and two fingers in there like a bowling ball. You go the whole way.
Yeah, my kills are rated R or X.
Ooh. Well, let's, I guess, how are we doing this? Were we recommending the movie, or were we rating, like, each movie, like, the franchise as we went?
I don't know, but we got McDonald's involved now.
All right, so are we both in agreement this is, like, a McDouble?
Yes.
Okay, and I think, I don't remember what you said. I think our ratings were the same. I'm guessing they're going to be the same now. I'm going to rank it still Halloween 1 at the top, Halloween 3, Halloween 2, Halloween 4.
Yeah, I'm the same. But I think for me, 2 and 4 are close-ish in terms of, like, you know, rating and stuff like that. Yeah, so, like, Three is a level above 2 and 4, and I think I do rank 2 higher than 4, but not, like, I don't think 2 is a vastly superior.
You know, I would say, though, if I were comparing 2 and 4, I think this movie, I think it's paced a little better than 2. Like, at times 2 kind of feels like it's, to me, I remember saying it felt like it kind of meandered a little bit, like in the second act. Mm-hmm. I feel like the pacing of Halloween 4 is maybe a little tighter. Although I enjoy Halloween 2 more in this movie, I would say that at times, like, the pacing in Halloween 2 kind of dragged a little bit for me.
Yeah. Oh, 4 is also, I don't know, this is a draw for some people, 88 minutes. So
that's true. You're in and out.
Yeah.
So, well, all right. Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers. I guess we're going to rate these in terms of the McDonald's menu. It gets a good McDouble on the value meal.
Yeah, solid McDouble.
So I'm curious to see how it goes from here. If you'll, like, I'm just trying to think again. This is maybe a spoiler for you, Nick, but I'm trying to think of what would be below a McDouble.
Well, anything with a single patty.
Okay. Well, when we come back, when the Apocalypse Studio Halloween Retrospective returns, we will be getting revenge with Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers. You can't kill a Halloween movie, Sheriff. It doesn't die like a regular movie dies. We'll be right back. McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Sandwich, a new kind of cute.